Believer Fire podcast. Nick and JP are in here in late March. We watch some movie. We listen to some album. We're really getting into that pure off season where baseball is approaching in a couple days. We've got the Masters golf tournament next weekend. So it's a down moment for sports, you know, football fans, but we're trying to pick ourselves up. JP, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. It's not so down yet. I mean, I haven't hit that. I haven't hit that yet.
That's good.
Saturday hasn't happened yet. And then, you know, we've got Final Four Saturday. It's been a long, wonderful ride since the first four. And, you know, March Madness, there's nothing like it. It's one of the biggest letdowns when it ends, though, because it is like a cliff that you fall off of.
That's a great call. That honestly, I've been kind of just stunned by it, that it slipped my mind, but it has been extremely exciting for those who have historically picked the ones and two seeds. This tournament was not for you. This was a wild one.
Right. It's the most exciting championship in sports, in my opinion. If I was into hockey, that might be more exciting because of the whole, and you know, like if I'm not big on the finals of NBA, but they're pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess I wouldn't like it that much if I was into hockey. Yeah. It's the one game thing,
right?
Lose one game and you're out.
Yeah. In the NFL, I mean, it's great, but I don't know, the playoffs in recent years, even if it is one and done, it just doesn't have the madness that March Madness does. So yeah, I agree. It's probably the best.
And, you know, it's the NBA, it's starting to get towards the end. I saw a team removing their star player already from an NBA team.
Mm.
And knowing that they're not going to the playoffs. So, you know, that's already happening there. So, I mean, I like the playoffs. That's when it really ends. That's when you really start mock drafting really hard.
Mm.
It's after like the NBA playoffs or something.
We can definitely get that going, man. But we do have an off-season film, and I've loved this idea that you brought forward of an album. You know, they haven't all hit, but it's been so exciting to learn new music with you, man. And we've got some bangers this week to talk about. Which one do you want to do first, man?
We can do the music first.
Let me lean it towards you. You know, you brought this up as a Anthony Fantano special. I haven't seen Fantano in quite some time, so exciting to kind of get word of mouth from you. We have a Griselda release. Actually, I don't even know if he was still with Griselda. This is Conway the Machine. I didn't know anything about this group except for, you know, when I was into vinyl records, Griselda was kind of a up-and-coming, very sought-after vinyl record distribution, and they were so expensive. That's all I knew about them. I did not dive into their music at all. So excited to kind of put my big toe in the water here. And I hope I hope that I remembered which album were we supposed to listen to from Conway, JP?
It is
was it his debut from King to a God or God Don't Make Mistakes?
Don't Make Mistakes.
Okay, good. I'm glad I picked the right one. I was nervous I was showing up with the wrong album. So we're listening to God Don't Make Mistakes. Came out little over a year ago in early 2022. I'm not sure if he was still technically with his group Griselda, but you know, as well,
he's there as like a package piece Griselda Records and kind of like merged over to Eminem's record label.
Oh, I did not know that. Interesting.
Yeah, so it's not just him. It would be like Benny the Butcher.
Right.
And I don't know like all those other guys besides Benny, you know.
Right. And we've got, you know, a 50-minute album with a lot of a lot of production by The Alchemist is working in here. You mentioned a few features. We also have T.I. on this album and Lil Wayne and Rick Ross. So some interesting choices to bring on to this album.
It's funny to think of The Alchemist as an artist after watching him on Fuck That's Delicious and stuff like that.
Oh, you know what? I've only dabbled in that and I don't recall his presence there. I don't know too much.
He's such a clown. He's such a clown in real life. I love him, but like, God, I can't believe he's like one of the artistic geniuses behind the Grand Theft Auto score and things like that.
He's pretty cringy.
Oh yeah, The Alchemist is like, oh boy.
Well, what did you think of this, man? Give me your first. Was this your first taste into the Griselda? You said you knew Benny the Butcher. You've listened to his work, maybe.
Not really.
Okay.
But no, I like Conway. I've never really, I didn't really delve into him until now. This is the first album. I didn't listen to the other one. So Conway hailing from
Chicago? No, Buffalo, New York.
No, he's from Buffalo, New York.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So that his whole style is really refreshing. It's like, it's like the New York style. It's really kind of like gritty. And you know, it is funny that he is doing things with The Alchemist, because one of the artists that he reminds me of the most is Action Bronson.
Okay.
Like, they have, and Bronson out of Flushing,
right?
You know, he's really close to there, and heavily reliant on The Alchemist. You know, they kind of, their careers come in the wake of like the Wu-Tang Clan and Mobb Deep and stuff
right.
like that. Like, they kind of have to, there are some of the artists like Joey Badass and stuff that have to hold up the city of New York and be like, this is what the next generation is. Conway has been actually like silently killing shit. Like, he's been going and doing like collab, like features on really popular songs and shit like that. And I've heard him in a different place that I didn't even know. Like, it happened when I was listening to his most played songs on Spotify. It came up with a song that I can't remember what it was, but it was like a really popular song from like a music, like from like a soundtrack, you know? And I was like, damn, I didn't realize he was on it. So yeah, I think like for what he is, I think he's really good. He's not the, and this album, I think it is pretty decent. Like, there's a lot of songs that I don't like on this album because they're kind of annoying and repetitive.
Feel you.
But like, you know, I think that he is doing just a fantastic job of keeping the whole like New York rap style going. Because he really stays true to like everything like hip hop and New Yorkish like style. I'm trying to pull up the track list right now, but
sure.
For some reason the Spotify is not working on my computer.
Well, I'll dive in a little bit till you pull that up, and I would agree with you that the album, you know, it has some weak points. I think towards the back half of the album, there are some There's some gems, but for the most part, it kind of gets a little samey. But right off the bat, you know, the production I think is extremely crisp. I honestly, before looking at this, I thought that The Alchemist was produced a few more of the tracks. It looks like he only did Piano Love track three, and then the last one, Piano Love. I do enjoy that production. It's kind of this off-kilter, harrowing piano ballad with crazy drum mix behind it. So I really love the production. And honestly, JP, with in terms of his flow, it's really nice. I think Conway's delivery, there's not a lot of variability that he kind of flexed. You know, we just came off of Jid's release, and Jid, you know, shows much more of a vocal range, which is not required, but I do like a little flexibility, particularly if you're not going to get a ton of features that star. So it does get a little samey. And to be honest, you know, when I was like 14, 15, JP, the hip hop that talked about, you know, killing people and slinging drugs and making the most money and having the most bitches was right where I wanted it. But nowadays, it kind of feels really dated, even though this came out last year. I just think that lyrics that are essentially like, come at me, dude, I'll kill you if you do, essentially for a while. Like a lot of gun promotion, it feels like. And that just doesn't really resonate with me. Where I think he's honestly at his best, and this was similar to what I said about Jid's release, is just when he's being completely transparent about his own kind of you know, self-doubt. You know, the track where he's talking about stress, track eight. It's not honestly that much of a banger of a track, but his emotionality about just opening up and saying, you know, does anybody even give a fuck that I'm just beating myself up inside and living day to day extremely stressed out is great. And then I don't exactly know where he talks about, maybe in a few of them, honestly, where he openly talks about a kid that he, one of his kids that he lost at a very young age. And honestly, I don't even know if that happened. I have to imagine it probably was real, but. And then he talks about how his, you know, his face got fucked up from a gunshot and how he survived that and how he had to deal with that trauma of people, you know, looking at him wherever he goes because he looks kind of fucked up. And so I like when he's really emotional and forward about his difficulties. And it's almost just a little bit of a shame that it's either that or basically talking about how much of like a actual gangster he is, which is just not really my favorite music these days. But were you able to pull up the track list? Did you want to dive into some specific tracks?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm no gangster myself, but there has to be some sort of platform for gangster rap.
Fair.
And if that's really how it be up in Buffalo, then I have no qualms with hearing how it is. One of Khan's favorite ad libs that I love hearing is just that.
See, for me, that sounds, and he does it a few times. It sounds cool. Like I do get with it, but I guess JP, I'm so anti-gun at this point in my life that I'm just like, can we not? Like I'm with you, man. It's probably very much the real world. And to get that off your chest is important, but I don't know. It reminds me of when Kanye came out with his Kids See Ghosts, and it starts off with like a really sick, like clack, 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 kind
Oh,
of opening.
I know that opening.
It sounds really fucking sick. And I also like the do, 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 do. Like it really does work for the tracks. And honestly, you know, speaking back about the production, the vocal layering of all no album I don't think has ever done a hype man better than in this album. Like you'll just get really random hype man background and it flows so well. Usually that's so cringy, but it really works. Anyways, that's my soapbox. And I had to stand on it for this one. But, and the problem is that some of the best fucking tracks, like I think the first three tracks, even the first four tracks, Lock Load is the production is so good. Tear Gas, the production is incredible. The flows are fantastic. Even Lil Wayne doesn't honestly make me cringe. Rick Ross, I think, does okay.
Yeah.
It's just all about killing people and making as much money as you can. Anyways, you go ahead, JP.
Track two is pretty great. A lot of newer upcoming rappers are having Lil Wayne tracks on their
Right.
record, and those are tending to be like some of the good ones. As much as I don't like Lil Wayne at
Yes.
all, I don't like his solo music, and I usually don't like any of the stuff that he's on. I hate the way his voice sounds. The funny thing about him is when he talks about like pooping and shitting, or whatever, like he's gonna
I
like
feel you.
piss on your lips or something like that. Yeah, that's funny, but everything else sucks. And Piano Love, you're right, that's a great song. It's weird. It kind of reminds me of like some old MF Doom shit. Like
Yes.
it sounds like an MF Doom song almost. And that's another thing that he kind of channels on some of his more like monotonous tracks, when he's just talking about a little bit of like when his rhymes are getting a little bit wacky and he's getting a little bit silly and just saying whatever he wants to, you know. Like that's the kind of shit that Doom used to be with back in the day. I like Drum Work. That's a good track. Wild Chapters, that one's good too. I think Guilty might be my favorite song on that
Guilty's,
album.
oh man, I don't know if it's a sample or a original, but that soulful track is fucking awesome.
It almost doesn't belong on this album. It really stands out. It's nothing like any of these. Like it immediately gets right back to business with John Woo Flick right afterwards with this just like really like just like, not that I'm not trying to like I guess I really don't like that song very much. John Woo Flick.
I think the production's killer, but overall, yeah, I'm with you. It kind of feels a little samey at that point.
Stressed, while it is very like introspective for him talking about everything else, I mean, I can't really get behind the beat and the
Agreed.
chorus. Like,
Agreed.
can anybody see that I'm stressed? Like, that's kind of an annoying. Like, it's pretty annoying.
Feel you.
Now, the Chanel Pearls with Jill Scott is pretty good, and I feel like Conway should feel very lucky to be able to have this level of involvement from her on a song, because it's not just like having some her humming in the background or anything like that. Like she raps and stuff like this. It's definitely serious. He should be mad thankful. And
Agreed.
it's a great song. So, and the rest of the album is not like crazy good. The Keisha Plum song is okay, and the last song doesn't suck, and it's kind of a good way to ride it out. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'll still be listening to this, you know. I'll be coming back to it a little bit
Yeah,
on a lot of these tracks.
it excites me to try out his debut album, and also if he looks like he might have another one on the way this year. So yeah, I'm very interested. It's the production's is very solid, and some of the tracks just you know, the vocalizations and the lyrics, they combine to make something pretty special. So I think it's absolutely worth a listen all the way through, and it's a quality product for sure. Should we turn?
Do you think Guilty was the best song?
Man, you know what? I'm looking at it now. I do love Tears. I want to say that I can't remember if it was Piano Love or Drum Work. I can't remember which one, but it's got an awesome, again, another soulful sample, feminine soulful sample. I'll have to go back to check which one.
I think it's probably Drum Work, because Piano Love is like straight up. And the soulful sample, there's that person on the feature that has a really long name that has like a 7 and an X. And then she even has a line in the song that's about how like the people always like don't pronounce her name or ask about it or something like that.
She does say that. Yeah.
Pretty cool song.
It was a cool song. I think it's probably a toss up between those three. I think Piano Love, Drum Work, and Guilty are the tops, and the first two, Lock, Load, and Teargrass are worth, you know, dabbling a few times for sure. Well, let's hop over. We've been working through Sofia Coppola's filmography. We've done a healthy amount. We started off with On the Rocks, into The Beguiled, kind of working backwards. Checked out Marie Antoinette last week, and then did a little, or 2 weeks ago, did a little bunny hop over Lost in Translation to her debut, The Virgin Suicides, which I had never seen before. You have. And boy, you know, you kind of prefaced me with saying, hey, it's a hard hitter. There's no joke in the title. It tells you what it's going to primarily focus on. And you start us off with this one, man. Tell me a little bit about, was this your first Coppola film? You know, what's kind of your history with this one?
No, I think my first one was Lost in Translation.
Okay.
And it just kind of moved over to this one. Mm. I think the first time I watched it was actually on the physical copy back when I was living in Orlando.
What time?
I would go diving in the DVD bins, mm-hmm. and they would have $5 DVDs, and I would get anything and everything I could see that was by like a director that was good or something, because
fuck yeah,
$5 was nothing to me back then,
right?
And it probably still isn't, but I don't have I can pay that for a subscription service
per month.
To watch something anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
So this movie is really heavy. It's I guess it was her first major movie.
It was. So had you seen it a few times since then, or is this is the first revisit since that?
This
first
is the first revisit.
Wow. Okay.
You know, it's not something you want to watch all the time, I guess.
Right. That's totally fair for sure.
It's not like as much of a feeling as it gives you at certain times of like nostalgia of like, oh, this is what it used to be like to be a teenager. This is what like we're not old. We're not so old or so young that we don't remember like a landline phone call and talking to girls' parents about going out and stuff like that. And
sure.
It's, you know, there's moments in the film where it's a good feeling and everything could turn out good. But I mean, about the time that the one chick gets in trouble.
Yeah.
That's when everything is fucked.
That is a big turning point for sure.
And it's that little kid's fault for leaving her and dip setting for starting the chain of events that ended up with a bunch of dead teenagers.
Right. Yeah. I come off of this movie and to you all listening, thinking, is it worth it or not? I do think it's worth it. So if you don't want any spoilers, I guess we already did tease a little bit, but some of the things about this movie, like you said, there's a lot of relatability, even though these are like 16-year-olds. We re remember those frustrations. We remember dating girls who parents did not want it to be happening. Certainly not doing what we were doing. And man, there's just so much uncomfortableness throughout the film. It really sets you on edge. I think that Sophia, man, what a strong debut in terms of, the story's right there. As you said, as you started off this filmography, if Sophia wants to tell a story, she'll tell the story. But the peripherals here of some of the cinematography, some of the layout of the discussions between characters, it's just so understanding and it paints so much emotion on their faces. And honestly, some of the shots feel so modern in their takes. The angles and even what she's shooting, some still landscapes or still shots to just kind of set some mood. It's just wonderful. And then towards the actual, themes and plot, fascinating to have this kind of voiceover character who's describing it as the boy next door, essentially. But to get so intimate, so much to like here, so much to be frustrated about from the storyline. Very few things to dislike, honestly. You've got the strong parental characters being overbearing. They're wonderful. The father, James Woods, who is in quite a bit of stuff. I feel like I know him most, honestly, as the kind of creep guy from Casino who like hits on the main guy's wife, but he's in a lot of stuff. He's exceptional. Kirsten Dunst, I don't know if it was technically her debut, but she was legitimately 16 and she's having to do, what I think a lot of 16-year-olds would be very uncomfortable doing in terms of the sexuality and the confidence that she has to show throughout. Like, it's kind of incredible what she was able to pull off. And oh, I didn't even realize it's oh, okay. I thought, yeah, I saw on the cast that a Schwartzman. I thought that we got our Schwartzy back in here. I didn't see him in there. No, it was Robert Schwartzman, so scratch that. But yeah,
That's
man.
just like earlier when I was looking at some card packs that said they had Josh Allen rookie cards, and they
Oh
were
no.
Josh Allen Jaguars.
Oh
I
no.
caught it though, I didn't buy it.
Ooh, that's fucked up though, goddamn. But yeah, so much to like here. I think honestly, JP, my favorite scene, and it's tiny, but it's when Trip goes to either his gay dad's or like dad and a buddy can't. I think like gay dad's, right? I'm not exactly sure, but he's
Yeah.
like asking for love advice from his dad slash dads. And man, it's so charming the way it's set up. You've got this like super hippie new age vibe going. They're in like their robes and sunglasses, and it's just awesome. I love the charm to it. They're trying their best to, just be confident, just talk about whatever, and you've got her there, man. And so
And there,
it's
he's just dealing with like the worst of the worst type of shit. It's like almost it's almost funny how fucked those boys were, like
right.
from the beginning.
Yeah, so that was probably my favorite. The boy, the ending comes fast, doesn't it? I mean, it goes from that transition of they're out partying, they're having this wild, free little escape, and then honestly, I think suicide is kind of fucked up in general. I'm not saying I'm totally against it, I guess, but it's a fucked up thing. And the way that the girls almost kind of put it on these boys, because they're the first to walk in and see all this shit, is, man, I mean, I'm sure those, it seems like those kids, I guess, rebounded decently enough, but I have to imagine there's some prolonged trauma there for sure. So.
The runtime of the movie helps, and it's kind of been the same thing with all the ones we've been watching. She seems to kind of keep it short and sweet, which, with an artsy type of film, that might normally be best,
I do agree. I think it's interesting that we were able to watch this post The Beguiled, because honestly, a lot of the structure of the girls and the matron in that movie, it's there's a lot of similarity there. And I liked, some of the scenes that you see where they're in their house kind of circled around. It's interesting, kind of the similarity between those two films. So I liked that. I think you also get a lot of, Lost in Translation kind of put it on the map for me as well. Again, those still pieces of landscape and atmosphere, she's clearly starting to get her taste for that, and it would show even further in Lost in Translation. So I think this was, it's a clear, understandable beginning film. It's not, obviously she's coming from greatness. And I'm sure the studios, I don't know who produced this, but I'm sure once they heard the name, they were like, fuck yes, let's try anything. This will be easy. So it wasn't one of those debut films where she really had to kind of be like a bitch to the production companies and do just kind of an offshoot film. She got to do her film. She wrote this screenplay, adapted a novel. It's just exceptional how she was able to do that. I'm trying to see, this was 99 and she was born in 71, so she was 28. I think she adapted in 25, or she was 25 or so. But really just extremely impressive, and kickstarted a wonderful career. So
I mean, if anybody wanted someone to adapt something and just not make it a shit show and just make it have the feeling of whatever the subject matter is, I think she's your lady.
yes, now that I'm kind of clicking. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, JP.
I was just gonna say, like, even now.
Yeah, I agree. One of the more interesting scenes is, obviously we have this voiceover from a future of one of the boys next door or whatever, but we also get a few scenes of the main love interest, Trip, as a grown man. And he reminisces about, oh, I loved her so much. I've been with a lot of women, but I loved her the most, or whatever. And it's just fascinating, honestly, to even approach that kind of perspective. And then, of course, his kind of bow out is that he's apparently at like some sort of drug rehabilitation, or I think, or alcohol, rehab or something like that. And he's clearly not in a very good way. He still has his charm and his kind of suave, but he doesn't come out of this clean. And I think that was pretty fascinating. The burning of the records, it's just, you really start to understand the kind of craziness. Maybe one small gripe is the first suicide, where you have her, I guess, jumping out of her window onto a spiked fence.
Is it starting to become a comedy at that point? You're like, what the fuck?
I was like, what the fuck, dude?
What is this, like, Freddy versus Jason?
All right. It was a little goofy, but from that point on, it's extremely serious. There's no joking about it. You do get some pretty interesting characters visualizing the dead girl. You even get a nice, well, I think it's a nice scene. It's kind of one of the scenes that maybe other directors would leave unsaid, but you've got them like trying to remove the fence that she jumps on, and they struggle with it. They've got all these big guys trying to remove it. They end up getting the truck to do it. And again, it's one of those scenes that another director might just show the house without the fence, but I like seeing the kind of arduous nature of it. And Yeah. So I, again, it's a trim 95 minutes that all work. So glad you brought it to us. I'll be honest, JP, I have not thought of what to do next. We could touch on there were three that we skipped. We skipped Lost in Translation, Somewhere, and the Bling Ring. I'm happy to try any of those. I'm also happy to jump ship into something else. Should we talk off pod, or do you have something in mind?
I don't have anything in mind. Let's talk off pod. I'm thinking jump ship. And I'd love to tackle an album that we both haven't listened to.
Let's do it, man. We'll discuss, and we'll hopefully be back next week. Hopefully you're able to catch some opening day of baseball if you're interested. Finish up the March Madness, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, see you.
See ya.